and it was going to propose a resource-based economic system. Technocracy was a brand new economic system. There's never been such a thing in the world before. Who is it going to serve? Is it going to serve us and help us as humans? Or is it going to serve the elite? And is it going to be used as a means of control and social engineering? That's really the question. In the first instance, it's wonderful. In the second instance, it's horrific. The Facebooks, the Twitters, the Googles, the Amazons, and so on, we know in practice that they're not only not neutral, they are flat out biased against anybody who holds an opinion unlike their own. Human frailty and human failure onto these programs, virtually guaranteeing the only thing that's going to happen in the end is that the mistakes that humans make now are simply going to be made faster and more automatically. IBM is another. We're talking the giant, giant companies, right, that provide this technology. Of course, there's Google and there's Amazon and there's Microsoft too. But they're driving the smart city technology to impress this whole level of management on top of a city.
The scientists at LivePet are hard at work solving our cancer epidemic. They have the most promising cancer trials going on now with pet clinics around the country that I have ever seen. You can see the promising cancer research and trials going on some of the past shows that I've done. The links are below. While working with C60 and other ingredients, these talented scientists developed a hair growth serum that really works. They sat on it for years. After all, cancer is their focus. But they now realize how much the profits from this product could really help their cancer research. So the C360 Hair Growth product was launched. C360 Hair Growth is specifically designed to revive your hair growth by targeting hair follicles and restarting your hair growth cycle. C60, the active ingredient in C360 Hair Growth, reactivates hair follicles that have stalled due to hereditary hair loss, physical conditions, or environmental factors that may affect follicle production. You will begin to see visible results using C360 Hair Growth within 3 to 6 weeks. Buy today knowing that your future hair growth will help fund very promising cancer research. See more at the link below.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. In this episode, we're going to dive into how the world is moving towards technocracy, to a new world order, utilizing a new economic system, a technocracy. China is well on its way, if not already there. And I have Patrick Wood coming on. He researched the Trilateral Commission. He's been really into this. In fact, he wrote a book back in the early 80s, late 70s that universities used widely on learning about the Trilateral Commission and what was really going on. And he realized that their agenda was to implement a technocracy. And we're going to talk about technocracy from both sides, you know, managing resources and managing everything, automating everything and having technology manage everything. There's good parts to it and there's bad parts to it. Just like all technology, there's light and there's dark. And so we're going to talk about that. We dive into all different, my background, that's what I did. I designed computer systems, logical data structures, and I taught Bellcore engineers how to do logical data structures for US West back in one of the Bell systems before it was bought out a couple times. And so I did that at a pretty high level on training people how to do this. And so I understand how powerful this understanding your data and understanding how much you can automate this stuff and how you can manipulate society. So we're going to talk about that. And he sticks around to talk more about the culture of Silicon Valley, how that ties in, how people are having a, you know, confronting their own consciousness and having problems with that and how they're turning to some alternative sources to deal with it. And he does think it's helpful. I think you need to turn to solutions. How do we find solutions to move society forward without creating this nightmare control Orwellian situation? Because we don't want to stall advancement, but we sure the heck don't want to be controlled in every little thing we do and have a social credit system that makes it impossible for us to be different than the people who want to run the society. If we're different than the controllers, then they can control you. And that, we got to make sure we don't get into that kind of Orwellian situation. So he sticks around for that. The link is below for my patrons. Let's get into my show now with Patrick Wood. Patrick, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
You are the expert. We have become the expert on technocracy and how that is developing around the world and controlling our lives. And we are pretty far down the path of technocracy, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. And I want to ask you, you've also studied the Trilateral Commission in depth. When did you come to the conclusion that technocracy, and how did you come to the conclusion that technocracy is a plan of theirs and that it's a knowing, plan that they're doing on purpose?
Right. It was a few years ago that I discovered historic technocracy for the first time. I was almost ashamed to say that I never heard of it before. And back in the 70s, when I was writing about the Trilateral Commission, I had no clue that there was a historic movement called technocracy. If I had, and my writing partner, Anthony Sutton, as well, if we had known about historic technocracy, we would have pinned it on them right then. There's no doubt, looking backwards. But as soon as I saw and began to understand historic technocracy, I knew immediately that the Trilateral Commission was involved in it because I saw some of the common names, and I thought, I need to look a little deeper into this, and I did. The thing that really put the capstone on it was going back and rereading Zbigniew Brzezinski's book from 1970. It was called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. The word technotronic, as it turns out, really was pretty much a knockoff for the word technocracy. It was a technologically controlled society dominated by free traders, if you will. That is the global business interests. And it was going to propose a resource-based economic system. Technocracy was a brand new economic system. There's never been such a thing in the world before, a completely different economic system. And adding to that a little bit, Sarah, was the fact that Brzezinski was a professor at the time at Columbia University, New York City. And back in 1932, when technocracy congealed together, really kind of got going, it was at Columbia University. That's where most of them were from, not all, but most of the engineers and scientists were from Columbia University. And even though the movement only lasted about a little less than a year at Columbia, it had a huge impact on Columbia. And the movement did go on after Columbia kicked him out, became quite popular. But anyway, that's how I got onto technocracy. When I saw it first, I said, I knew there's something wrong here. And I need to investigate. And the trail that it took me on was just incredible, absolutely incredible.
Well, what did the trail take you on? I mean, as far as how do you know that the Trilateral Commission, their real agenda is to implement this and not implement it in the sense that, because we all know that technology being automated is kind of where we're going, even if it just in a natural way. But there's a difference between automating technology and then using it to manipulate and control everybody. That's a different deal. So how do you know that their goal is more nefarious?
Yeah, I have a computer background as well, like you, and I love technology. I have to confess, personally, I do. I've been involved with it all my life, one way or another. The issue, as far as technology is concerned, we're talking about here, is who is it going to serve? Is it going to serve us and help us as humans, or is it going to serve the elite and Is it going to be used as a means of control and social engineering? That's really the question. In the first instance, it's wonderful. In the second instance, it's horrific. So this is what we want to guard against. And it's very difficult for people to understand where that line is between serving me and serving them.
Well, and that's kind of the message on all this technology that we have. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a and it all ties back into technocracy. Mm-hmm. Where it can be used for beautiful things. I mean, we can really, our healthcare, just so many parts of our society can be improved.
Right.
But then it can also be this horrible dark side to it. And
there is a, there's a philosophy that underlies technocracy and transhumanism as well. I'll just kind of associate those two together as kind of like Siamese twins joined at the hip. Transhumanism is the application of technology to man, to an individual, to ostensibly to escape, achieve immortality and so on. But technocracy is to society, using the same philosophy. Technocracy points to society, transhumanism points at the individual. Both of these were undergirded by a philosophy called scientism. And scientism is a religion, actually. I don't want to get off into a philosophical argument here, but basically scientism says that scientists have the ability to predict the future, number one. That truth is only discoverable through science, no other way. So it rejects all other forms of intellectual inquiry. It rejects philosophy. It rejects religion per se, especially Judeo-Christian religion. And it just says basically, if we can't discover it through science, it doesn't exist.
With the world being so crazy, I have two great gift ideas to help you and your family stay safe. First, the Shockwave Torch. This tiny tool drops a 260-pound thug in 2 seconds. It packs so much power in such a small package, it's scary. Thank God it's got a safety on it. If you want to stay safe in a dangerous world, I promise the Shockwave Torch will help. You can also get, as an additional item, this combo pack. It's an ultra-powerful police-grade 18% pepper spray with an ultra-discreet 3 million volt stun gun. I am getting these for every one of the women in my family. I believe we should all be carrying this for self-defense. And with gun laws becoming stricter than ever, what a great option for women in your family or even men in your family to be safe. With purchase of any other item, you can get this for only $29. So click the links below to find out more information.
Well, it depends on, and this is what I always say, it depends on what you define science as. If you're defining science as what is, and I talk about this sometimes, right. And you will be honest, intellectually honest with yourself and understand that we might not be smart enough to understand what science really is, and we're not advanced enough. And so other disciplines are going to have to deal with it until we do get there.
Right.
Versus just saying what we know now.
Yeah, this is a very good point. Science, as it should be, the hard sciences, for instance, like biology, mathematics, engineering, civil engineering, so on. We call those the hard sciences, if you will. They really are a matter of fact type of thing. If a physicist is looking at a physics problem, there's laws, there's rules and laws and stuff surrounding that. It becomes very simple to solve a problem, and it will solve the same way every time. But the science that transhumanists and technocrats are talking about is most often nothing like that. It becomes a religious proposition rather than a truly scientific inquiry. Now, I'll give you a tangible example so people can understand it. Global warming, perfect case in point. Most weather scientists around the world do not agree with Al Gore type, you know, we're all going to die, the ice caps are going to melt, whatever, by next year, whatever. They're on record as making those statements of proposing scientific papers and so on that you know, global warming is not man-made, that global warming is not a threat to humanity, that they say it is. But the whole body of global warming science is being put forth as fact, indisputable fact. No possible chance for any discussion. We don't want to talk about it. It's settled. The science is settled.
Yeah, the science is settled. I've heard that phrase, which is ridiculous.
Exactly. And then Al Gore, who is the champion of global warming, he's was a member of the Trilateral Commission, by the way, just coincidental, I'm sure. Al Gore said a couple years ago that deniers, that's all those 30 plus thousand scientists that signed a petition refuting his claims, but he says deniers deserve to be punished.
Oh, geez. And I know so many more deniers who haven't signed it. So, well, but keep going. Yeah. Who are scientists?
I don't want to really get into a big discussion on global warming per se, but this is a religious proposition. This was like the witch trials, you know, in Salem. If you deserve to be punished, well, that's not a scientific claim. That's just flat out a religious claim. You don't believe like me, you should be punished.
But we're having that same whole thing is happening in social media, in fake news, in everything. Yes. Our whole culture is moving towards that. And the left, the so-called left, which I don't think they're acting like the left, because that's not, so a lot of people are going, wait a minute, that's not me. But that's how they're acting.
Yes, that's exactly right. There's no tolerance in this anywhere. And you'll also find data corruption scandals everywhere you look. This has been true in global warming. There have been repeated, year after year, scandals exposed where data was manipulated to support their thesis. This is not science This is fraud is what it is. And you see the same kind of sloppiness with when you look at, you know, the data scientists behind the Facebooks of the world, the Googles of the world, and so on. They claim that their data, their approach, their engineering, whatever, is perfectly neutral. You know, it's not biased one way or another. It's just, hey, it is what it is. You know, it's AI or whatever. It's an algorithm. Yeah, it's completely neutral. But we know in practice that the Facebooks, the Twitters, the Googles, the Amazons, and so on, we know in practice that they're not only not neutral, they are flat out biased against anybody who holds an opinion unlike their own.
That's exactly right. But, you know, behind what people don't realize is behind any software that's developed is a human being. So it's only going to be the decisions that human being decided to do. And it's not always accurate. There could be bugs in it. You know, it could be wrong decisions that flat out create errors. Or it could be biased, like you're saying.
Right. And by the way, data scientists now, I'm proud of somebody in the discipline that's doing some serious study. Data scientists who have analyzed artificial intelligence algorithms, similar to what are being used in social media right now, they have discovered that AI programs will inherit biases from the programmers. And this is something that they try, the programmers say, we don't put any bias into it. You know, we just program it, you know, at X plus Y equals whatever. We just program it. But they have found now, other scientists have looked backwards and studied and said, you know what? There are biases coming through that reflect the biases of the creators.
Well, even worse is there are biases that are going to come through with artificial intelligence, depending on where you expose that software to. So yes. If you first expose them to hard bias, they're going to learn that bias.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And so nobody really knows how artificial intelligence is going to come out in the end. Some people are pretty scared about it. Others are saying, oh, it's going to be wonderful. You'll see. But the fact that biases do transmit into the creation, in other words, the creator has his thumbprint on his creation. This has been demonstrated with racial bias so far. It's been demonstrated with criminal bias. That is the tendency to do things that are outside the, you know, the rule set.
That's human behavior.
It is. It's like, okay, so we're impressing human frailty and human failure onto these programs, virtually guaranteeing the only thing that's going to happen in the end is that the mistakes that humans make now are simply going to be made faster and more automatically.
Well, I just see it as a complete nightmare. And I have two examples of automation that was a complete nightmare. Just recently, I tried to buy a computer for my husband, and I raised the credit limit. It was a debit card for my bank, and I made sure the bank was okay and everything else. And I went to go buy it, and in their database, they had the wrong zip code for me. And so it wouldn't go through. And so I could not buy a computer there unless I brought cash. I'm like, even though my bank was all tight. It's like, that's an example. Now we move to a cashless society. Now what's going to happen?
That's right. We started back on a trail, and how do I know that the Trilateral Commission was involved in this whole thing? And just to fill in a little piece of the middle here, in 1973, the Trilateral Commission was formed by David Rockefeller and Brzezinski. In 1974, the United Nations, which has always had tight relationship with the Rockefeller family, the United Nations passed a resolution, a General Assembly, that called for the creation of a new international economic order. That's the title of the resolution. In 1973, the Trilateral Commission said exactly the same thing, that they wanted to foster a new international economic order. So out of the blue, the United Nations says, oh, we're going to have a new international economic order. We know now they envision technocracy, because what happened in the mid-1980s, the doctrine was created that fueled the 1992 Rio de Janeiro summit, the first Earth summit, that created Agenda 21, that later led to 2030 Agenda just a few years ago, and the new urban agenda a few years ago that the United Nations has proposed. And in 1992, the doctrine of sustainable development was articulated by the United Nations very carefully, very succinctly. And that doctrine was created earlier in the 80s by the Brundtland Commission that was appointed by the UN to study this, to do this. The Brundtland Commission produced a book called Our Common Future. This became widely acknowledged as it. This became the intellectual fodder for Agenda 21, and the United Nations praises the leader of the Brundtland Commission, whose name was Gro Harlem Brundtland. She was the former Prime Minister of Denmark. She was a member of the Trilateral Commission. The doctrine she fed into that commission, into that book that was Our Common Future, was Trilateral Commission policy encoded for the United Nations. So they passed the whole thing off, this resource-based economic system. They basically passed the whole thing off to the United Nations, made it viral in a sense, because that's what the UN does, takes it all around the world. And they renamed the whole process from technocracy, which had been solidly rejected by the American people in the 40s, they renamed it to sustainable development. It's a perfect name.
And you can see the ties. All the language are the same. Everything what technocracy is. It's just they changed the name.
Just a change of name.
Well,
it's a resource-based economic system that's controlled by energy.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions. Phrases that came out of there is ending sovereign nations, the end run of sovereign nations, booming, buzzing confusion. So can you talk about those two? Those are big things. I mean, they actually discuss that.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And it's interesting how tightly they kept to the narrative, the Trout-Otter Commission in particular, how tightly they kept to the narrative. Back in 1974, there was a professor by the name of Richard Gardner. He was a founding member of the Trout-Otter Commission. And he wrote this article for Foreign Affairs magazine called The Hard Road to World Order. That's why I named my recent book, Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, to finish his thesis, if you will. But he claimed that the way to achieve globalization was not by a frontal assault on the nation state, but rather performing an end run, chipping away at it piece by piece. And he said this would result in a booming, buzzing confusion that would make it very difficult for anybody to figure out where are the lines of demarcation anymore. And that, you know, today, by the way, nothing makes sense. It is a booming, buzzing confusion
today.
You're
absolutely right with that.
No economic tool works anymore. No social tools, no statesmen, no political science tools. None of this stuff works anymore. It's been turned upside down.
It has. And that's why I bring in all different types of people to talk to them. I'm like, what is going on? Because it's just so confusing and nothing fits in a neat little pretty package like people want it to.
Right. So Richard Gardner, in any case, he kind of stuck the flag in the ground. That's how I look at it. This wasn't a master plot. The article was only about 10 pages long. So it wasn't that big of a deal lengthwise. But he made the philosophical claim that they had tried a frontal approach previously. And fact is, if you look back in history in the 50s and the 60s, you say, yes, there were frontal approaches where they tried to just bang their way right through to create the new internet, the new economic order. And they failed. They got rejected one time, either through Congress or people or whatever. So they concluded the slow approach is going to be better in this. Let's just chip away at it little by little and conduct a number of end runs around national sovereignty to take it down. And this is exactly what's happened over 30 years. Agenda 21 was just huge for them. And everybody, you know, they've poo-pooed the United Nations and, oh, you know, kick them out, get the U.S. out of the United Nations and all that. There's been criticism of it, but nobody ever dug down deep enough to say, well, what are they really doing? You know, are they really just kind of an international menace and they don't amount to anything? Or is there something more substantive here? If you look around America today, you can go to any community in America. I don't care how small it is or how big it is, a city, a town, you know, a giant city, a little burg out somewhere, at rural communities as well, you will find Agenda 21 Sustainable Development Doctrine impressed on in every community now across America. It has completely invaded our country.
Can you explain it in detail? Give a couple examples. And because most people would be like, who hear this go, well, it's really not that big of a deal. You're exaggerating. But yes, you're not, if there's a nefarious, it's the bright side, dark side of technology. And we have to be aware of it because we're just going to run right into it and we won't be able to do anything about it. So can give us some examples of how our own city is being affected.
Here's what happened back in 1993 when Agenda 21 was about to be applied by Bill Clinton and his Vice President Al Gore, both of whom, by the way, were members of the Trilateral Commission. Just another coincidence. So was George H.W. Bush, by the way, who actually signed the Agenda 21 document, just as he was exiting the presidency. He was a member of the commission, too. So it was kind of, there's a little bit of nepotism.
Was Obama? Here. I know Obama was CIA and stuff. He was
Obama,
not. Okay.
Obama was not a member. He was surrounded by members of the Trilateral Commission.
He has his own background that's very nefarious.
He does.
But, yes.
He does. And he was part of that global cabal, clearly. For instance, all of his national security team, his NSA, the National Security Advisor, which is the most important position for the president, the gatekeeper, his director of national intelligence, and all of those offices around that, they were all filled by members of the Trilateral Commission. Go figure. Okay, well, yeah, you don't have to figure very hard. Where were we before we got off on that? Where was that? Oh, yeah.
You're going to give examples on.
Oh, yeah. Here's what happened. In 1993, the people that were trying to implement sustainable development in America in Agenda 21 knew they did enough focus groups and stuff. They knew that the American public would have a hissy fit if they found out what was going on. They changed the name. I have this on tape, by the way, where one of the speakers actually said this. They said, we can't use the name Sustainable Development or Agenda 21 because it will set off red flags everywhere we speak it. Let's change it to Smart Growth. Let's call it Smart Growth. And that is what's been done ever since.
It's so hard because smart growth is like, well, yeah, we want to have
smart
growth.
You don't want to live in a dumb city, do you?
Well, you can't argue with smart
growth.
It's
brilliant. It was a brilliant marketing ploy. But smart growth is sustainable development. Everywhere it goes, it's Agenda 21. It's in every community in America has bought into smart growth doctrine. So what the United Nations did, they created fostered a number of NGOs to be created. That's non-governmental organizations. Usually they're global, typically, and they are outside of government, and they're often tax exempt in what countries will allow that, like America with 501c3 status. And these NGOs took the Agenda 21 doctrine, and they turned it into a practical doctrine to implement it into cities and counties around America. One of these organizations, which is called ICLEI, it's an acronym. I can't think of it right off the top of my head exactly what it means, ICLEI. It was changed later to Sustainable Cities, but ICLEI came into America and hustled at least 650, 700 cities across America to adopt sustainable development Agenda 21 doctrines, and they called it smart growth. For us, they called it smart growth. They called it what it was for other countries, but for us, they called it smart growth. So you have these general plans that have been implemented all over America, where cities and counties creating general plans. They're green. They're they're all eco-sensitive, if you will, along the lines of the original Agenda 21 document. This didn't happen by accident.
Give an example, though, of how something that is good, that has been implemented, is also nefarious, and how they're going to use it.
Well, sure.
You know, because that's why we don't reject things, because it's, well, this is a good thing, but just don't use it against me.
Here's a good one. Agenda 21 called for eventually the elimination of automobiles from the cityscape. They called for moving people into cities, number one, but they called for different types of transportation, walking, bicycling, mass transit of various kinds, light rail, anything but cars. Okay, because cars were declared to be evil, and they produce pollution, you know, global warming, and so on, cars are bad, everything else is good. So you look around America today, and I would bet almost any of your listeners go outside, they're going to drive down and look for this. Look for the green or orange battery-operated bicycles that are being distributed all over the country. Look for the little scooters now, electric scooters that are battery-operated scooters. And you can rent these things by the hour. There's an app on the phone, and you can say, yeah, I see one over here. I'm going to go take it, and I'll use it for an hour, and then I'll just leave it. And just wherever I happen to be, I'll just leave it there. These scooters and bicycles have invaded cities around America. San Francisco is sick and tired of them already. They hate them because they're on the sidewalk all the time. We've got them all over the Phoenix area, just en masse. Almost every corner has four or five of these scooters on it, or bicycles. And they're all app driven. You have to pay money. And for the scooters, it's pretty expensive. It's like $10 an hour for, you know, to use this thing. But they say, well, you're only going to use it for 15 minutes to get where you're going. the movement to get people out of cars is part of the original Agenda 21 document. It's all over now. It's just, you say, well, that's good stuff. That just happened that way. Well, no, it didn't. Mesa, which is the town I live in, has a rather large light rail system now put in. Everybody fought the light rail system here. The people, the citizens, didn't want it. Businesses didn't want it. They did it anyway. And come to find out, the guy that implemented it, the mayor that really pushed it and drove it into existence, while he was mayor, was also the president of the National League of Mayors, which is a sustainable development organization that pushes all of these different programs into cities. So you see streets now all over America being redesigned to include bike lanes. Well, they want people to ride bicycles. They don't want them to ride cars.
Well, the thing is that they make decisions on how things are going to be based on how they want your behavior. A good example, I think, which is a nefarious one, is in California with the water supply, where they're rationing water, but at the same time, the rainwater they're redirecting to the back to the ocean because of helping. There's this animal that they want to help. Okay, and then the side problem with that is now they're trying to get people out of those areas because there isn't enough water and it's drying out and the fires and everything else. So it's all tied to what people are saying are Agenda 21. It's the nefarious behavior around the social engineering.
This is the essence of social engineering. It's using these things to modify your behavior, whatever that might be. They want to make it according to their designs, not yours. That's certainly not American. And you know, the idea in America is you can choose your own destiny and go for it, right?
Well, and the idea is to let free markets develop it. So if people really want the scooters, the free market would develop it and the demand would develop it and it'd become a good thing. And eventually, maybe you move in that direction because the people want it. Not a top-down social engineering thing that has a nefarious side deal to
exactly. it. Exactly. The market in Phoenix, by the way, is really, we see this in China, which is trying to implement these bicycles, these also. But a sharp person observed this, took some pictures of it over in the west part of the Phoenix area. There's a junkyard over there, not a landfill, not a dump, but a junkyard where you find automobiles typically, you know, old crashed, whatever, automobiles, and they sell parts. There was a mound, I'm talking a giant mound of bicycles, the green bicycles in particular, that had been bankrupted out of existence. And they took them to the dump and they simply threw them in a pile. And there was hundreds of bicycles in this pile. And they were all, I mean, you look at it, look to me like they probably were all serviceable bicycles. They went out of business. They were rejected by the public and they couldn't make any money. So they took them to the dump or to the junkyard, and they simply just piled them up there and said, I don't care. They sell them for scrap metal. The same thing has happened in China. There are pictures of piles of bicycles in China that just blow your mind. I'm talking like, you know, 200-300 feet high, where these have been rejected en masse by the public. And yet, the next week, there's another brand of bicycle on the street. Somebody else is trying it. Or another brand of scooter. We now...
Well, and that's fine if it's free market, right? Yeah. And it's not subsidized by the government.
In this case, they are. Because to get into a city, you have to go through not only the permit process, but there are grants available to these companies to promote green economy, right? To get people out of their cars.
What happens if the people just continually reject this? What are they going to do? Because technocracy, I mean, we do have free will here. So these are good examples because people are rejecting
this. We're talking about a lightweight example here, I think, with these scooters and bicycles. But
okay.
Give you another one that's a little more full of teeth. Smart city technology right now is a big thing. Okay, smart city technology.
Yeah, talk about smart cities, because people
are scared. That means sensors, it means cameras, it means license plate readers, it means tracking every individual in the city. It means, modifying what happens in the city according to the data that comes off of it, using data-driven policies, as they call it. and there are a number of large, giant companies that are kind of driving this. NVIDIA is one. Siemens is another, IBM is another. We're talking the giant companies, right, that provide this technology. Of course, there's Google and there's Amazon and there's Microsoft too. But they're driving the smart city technology to impress this whole level of management on top of a city.